Okay, guys, let's. All I can see is it looks much better there than it looks here. This monitor is really annoying right now. So first thing, we're in February.
Sorry, it's a depressing month. Oh, God.
So midterm. I could put it off, but it would just put off the pain. What is the midterm going to be next week? We'll do a review next week. We'll see. Today is the 4th. So it's the.
Today's the 5th, then there's the 7th, then there's the 12th, then there's the 14th. So, next week we will review on the 12th, and then on the 14th there'll be a test here. This week we will cover, some more material, basically try to get you up to speed on client-side JavaScript. The material on it will be based on the questions we've had in lecture, and on the material I've assigned in tutorial, not really in depth, but somewhat based on that. I will go through that on Tuesday. But basically, if you actually try doing something in tutorial with the things I told you, you'll be fine. If you just punted and didn't look at it, you're gonna suffer. So look at the stuff that I've given you in tutorial. You should be looking at that. You should have been looking at that anyway, because you kind of need that sort of information to be able to do stuff for the project. So yeah, it's February, Valentine's Day, woohoo. Okay, so it's a midterm. So going back here. So for today, what I wanted to do was, so the questions are about the lab we had on Friday, and actually what I want to do is I wanted to walk through this example, but not so much tell you exactly what's on here, but talk about how I go about figuring out something like this. What's my basic process? So I want to open this, I want to put this down, I want to move this here. Open with Firefox. Woohoo! So this got here. Open with. Oh, do I have? I now need an editor program of some kind. What do I have here? Well, this is not the lab. This is the standard.
That was a should, as in, if the world was proper, you should have it.
Yeah, that's the. Well, I mean, there's development things like Eclipse and stuff here. But what would I want? Let's see, Notepad. Yes, I've got Notepad. We'll do WordPad. Okay, let's. I know, it's very depressing.
WordPad does too many things.
Yeah, that was useful.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, you're saving.
No, I'm saving? Oh, God, thank you. I want to open. Yes, wrong. Okay.
Start on your button at the end.
I started, yeah, that would do it. All documents. There we go. No, don't save them. Thank you.
Where's the syntax pattern?
I know, this is just wrong.
And word wrapping.
And margins.
Okay, let's okay, there's gotta be something better here.
Just use Notepad?
Yeah.
Notepad
it
is
won't
for
wrap
like
the,
dot text.
It
just
yeah,
play
it.
Won't
wrap the,
it won't wrap it so badly?
Yeah.
WordPad is for people who want Word, but
okay, but I'm just NVU. What? Hmm?
People who don't want Word.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What?
Maybe not.
No, it's not.
No, it's connecting to the server.
Okay, let's...
Just download Vim Portable or something.
Vim Portable. I will... Actually, I'm going to download Emacs.
Yeah.
It has to be the Emacs because, well... Just... Okay, there we go. Emacs. Windows. Getting. Can I? Okay, no, I don't want that. I want. No, I don't want the FAC. Oh, God. Oh, NT Emacs? Okay, there we go. Oh no, it's a 7Z. Do I have 7Z? Is it?
Oh my god.
One. Yay. So, anyway, so how, first off, while this is downloading, hopefully I'm getting something that can actually let me look at this stuff reasonably. This is making me want to bring in my own computer, which I don't like doing, but I may have to. So how did it go with, some of you, how many of you knew about jQuery UI before this lab? Okay, not many of you. How many of you played with jQuery before? Okay, not many of you. So, how many of you, did jQuery UI make sense after going through this? Sort of? Okay, yeah. Okay, let's see what we... Let's see. Oh, look at that. 120K a second.
Woo.
That's so
Woo.
Fast.
That
so...
A bit too fast.
It does need to slow down. Okay, we will start up Notepad in the meantime. And let's...
Question.
Yes? Yes. Why would you ever inject a function versus
passing an entire
See, this is what I was going like. This is why I didn't even go to Notepad. Unix line feeds. It knows nothing about. This is why I never even touched Notepad, because I'm only using Unix text files. Huh? Yeah. But, what was your question? Sorry.
Would you ever choose to inject a function over just passing?
Inject a function versus passing an object. Depends on what you're doing. I mean, a function is... If you're going to send something an object is basically a set of key-value pairs. And so if you have things to associate, like a bunch of options, or you've got other things you set at the object. But if you want it to do something, if you want it to call... The big reason you give a function as an argument to something is a callback. You want it to call the function. Of course, if you're giving it an object, often the object will have functions, and there'll be many callbacks. So... The thing you should notice when you're playing around with the web is functions are everywhere. Your functions are, you know, methods, functions are arguments, you're creating functions, you know, on the fly. This is fundamental to how you do JavaScript. And this is part of why the web, I think, is really nice as a programming environment, and also why it's horrible. And it comes down to a concept known as domain-specific languages. So what's a domain-specific language? Any of you heard of this?
What? Guess a language that's designed to do one thing really well and nothing else.
So the classic way we do programming nowadays is you have a basic programming language, and then if you want to do something specific, you have a library or something, and that library has an API. Now, we tend to think of these APIs as, oh, to do this, I call this. To do this, I call this. But really, when we're thinking of APIs, it's defining a language. It's defining a language for solving a particular task. So, for example, jQuery UI defines a language for doing, you know, for creating interfaces. If you're using Win32, it defines an API, which means it really defines a language for doing things with Windows, not just the GUI. I mean, all kinds of crazy things. I'm sad.
So try selecting, and it just hasn't. I think you have 7-zip, but it's not registered.
Dash
zip?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's watch drag and drop happen here. Would this work? Oh!
Oh, yeah, no, you're making an archive.
Oh, no, I'm making an archive. No, that's not what I wanted.
Why don't you just open the containing folder of Emacs?
Yeah, no, I'm just... Okay, open. And this is on my desktop, I believe, so... Wait, open. Wait, wait, there...
No, it'll be in...
Computer, C, users, me, yes, desktop, thank you, escape, what is the interface on this thing? Okay, I'm just going
to... Down,
to the left of the URL bar. Oh, that's what that is. That's an up... See, my monitor's so bad, only here can I see that's an arrow. I'm kind of also dealing with... Okay, there we go. Okay, let's see this.
Hey, it's like magic.
Well, the thing is, whenever you see a magician perform a trick, you miss the hundreds, if not thousands, of times they did it badly.
Yeah. Some of those can be really funny, too.
Hmm?
Some of the times they do it badly can be really funny, too.
That is true. Okay, so... Wait, what?
First you unarchived it, now you're copying it.
Okay. I don't get it, but...
There are only
60
seconds remaining.
Okay, but so the idea of a domain-specific language is to realize that having a language that has too large of a vocabulary and has a grammar that is defined by, that is defined for some other purpose can be wrong. So instead, a domain-specific language basically says, take an API and make it the language, and define a grammar, define a syntax, so that you can do everything appropriately there. So what we're really doing with JavaScript and the web is there's a bunch of domain-specific languages done kind of wrong because they're all mixed together. You don't know what language you're actually working with. Now, contrast this with something like Jade. Or Jade or Stylus. If you look at Jade or Stylus, that's a domain, or Markdown, if any of you have played that. Those are domain-specific languages. The syntax of those is very different, but they're a markup languages, so they're designed to translate to something else. But the syntax is different, but self-consistent in that. When you're doing web stuff, you're all doing it in the context of the standard JavaScript, instead the standard DOM, things that are... Basically, we have at least 20 years of legacy behind them. And it shows. So whenever you're programming the web, you have to look for those domain-specific languages buried, where you would really like them to be somewhere else. And know what vocabulary there is. So let's see if we can, see if I can show you what I'm talking about here. Okay, bin, please run. Thank you. Okay, let's go here. Let's go to here. And yay. And let me make it bigger. Okay, fine. Now I want to change the font size, and this is not letting me do it. What version of what version of Emacs is this? It is? But normally you have like a control. Okay, fine. I'm going to go. Yeah, I know, it's like Windows makes everything wrong. Okay, options, multilingual, set default font, and it thinks about it. Wow. There we go. How's that? So if we're looking at, so this is the original HTML code, and we've got here a bunch of, so the first thing when you're looking at a document, HTML, you look at, okay, there's a doc type. There's a lot of magic that can happen in the doc type for specifying exactly what kind of document. It used to be much more important to say the exact doc type, but now it doesn't seem as much of an issue. It can run, you run basically into slightly different parsers depending upon exactly what the doc type is. If you just say HTML, then the browser generally figures out the right thing. But
saying HTML specifically makes it use HTML5.
Does it now use HTML5?
That is what doctype HTML is for. It says use HTML5.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you used to be able to say doctype. Oh, is it the all caps?
Nope. It's not case sensitive. You actually can't use the HTML5 text.
But older browsers will take that as a doctype. See, that's, it's like, okay. So that's, okay, that. I think what that really means is, as opposed to HTML5, that means that your code should check for features available in the browser and do the right thing based upon them. And if you're running in a modern browser, you're good. Because, yeah, that's how I used to write them. Anyway, so HTML... head. So this says it's a document, HTML, so that's closed by HTML at the bottom down here. Then there's a body and a head. So what's the difference between the head and the body, really, in terms of how you put your document? What are they for?
You don't see the
You don't normally see stuff in the head. Although I wouldn't put it past if you put the right things in the head that you might see it. What, huh? Yeah, okay, yeah. So that's, but so the head is meant to be the preamble for a page. It's meant to do the things that are global in scope. This is where you put the code normally. That applies to the whole page. It's where you want to put your globals or whatever. So here you'll notice that there's things like meta. So, what is the meta tag? So first off, one thing you should have ready is when you, so you should know first when you know HTML that there's HTML, there's a head, and there's a body, and it closes. Okay, that's a document. The tags inside, you're going to know some of them, and you won't know others. So when you don't know the others, what do you do? Yes. So let's look up meta. Ooh, all caps, no. Meta tag. So.
No,
not that one. Avoid that site. Meta element. Yeah, we'll go to Wikipedia. So can I even read
more
that on the screen?
W3
okay. So I'm trying to read this on the screen. I'm having trouble reading the text. Meta elements are used to provide structured metadata about a web page. So. This is the first of many examples you'll see of something that is a bit problematic, which is that the metadata, so the stuff that's in a meta tag, it's all kind of optional. It's kind of there. It's there. It can make the browser can use it, but if you take it away, the document is still correct. And that's the way it is for much of the things you stick in a web page. You cut them out, and the web page will still work. It just might not, but well, working to some approximation. So, believe it or not, I can't see the bottom of my screen, so I have to look over here to switch applications. I probably use Alt-Tab or, you know, but anyway, so this meta tag, so this is Kerasset UTF-8. So some browsers, in principle, might not respect this. But those that understand the Kerasset, you know, thing being UTF-8, that will help them. Then what's this? What's the slash angle bracket?
The meta tag is its
own. So what it says is normally in HTML, like in XML, every tag has an opening and closing. If you don't have a closing tag, if it's all going to be in one tag, you'd have nothing between the two opening and closing tags. Because normally you'd say slash meta here. Instead of having another one that says slash meta, just saying slash says it's closed. We're done. So you need to understand some of the grammar for this, but then the tags individually, it's a vocabulary. You're going to need to look these things up. I'm not going to tell you all of them. I don't know all of them. Nobody knows all of them. It's kind of frightening. What?
Does Sir Tim, does he have an idea?
No. It's bigger than anyone. I mean, not saying strictly speaking just things like this. I mean, there aren't that many of those tags. But it turns out tags are kind of everywhere in these documents. And figure out what they mean sometimes involves trial and error, I hate to say. So now we have a script tags. We talked about script tags. These are loading a bunch of code. Now, first thing, if you're trying to figure out something with these things, you go like, what happens if I take these out? So let's first do that. We're going to take out the style sheets too. So, Lexi, I'm sorry.
Actually, it's good that you deleted all of them at once.
Yeah, because there's dependencies between them. So it's good if you're moving code, look at it all. So now let's see what this page.
This one, I do not care about this app. Let's get rid of it now. We've got this one and here.
Now let's go back here, and now let's reload.
That looks pretty.
But you notice, now look at this. And let's say I type in my name. Let's type in the, you know, let's say Canada. Let's say October 7th, 19. Okay.
Yeah, my girl.
Yes,
really.
So, does the page work? Yes. The page still works. We got rid of all the JavaScript and it still works. Because it's an old-fashioned form. This is an HTML form. And what does an HTML form do? You type in stuff. And then when you submit the form by hitting this submit button, which you define as attribute in the DOM, then it sends to the server the URL along with all the things that you passed it. They're all right there. Now, we don't have a server program here to receive the URL. It's just running locally, so we just get the same page. Because the browser, in general, ignores anything past this. Anything past the question mark, sorry. The question mark after that is server-specific parameters, key-value pairs. So that's been sent to the that would be normally sent to your server. These would be given as part of the HTTP request. These would be options. And so you can look up, you can get these on the server as key value pairs. And this will be done because it's a form, by default it'll be go as a post. So you'd have to set up your server to deal with that. That functionality is all there without any JavaScript. So what's a JavaScript for?
Making it not suck.
So let's talk about this suckage, so to speak. What's wrong with this? First off,
it looks like the 1990s.
It looks old-fashioned because it's using the default way the browser has to format things, using the default font selection, default spacing and everything. The email box stays there. It's just there. So the CSS is what's going to change how this looks, and the JavaScript is going to give it behaviors, some of which will statically change how it looks, some of it will dynamically change how it looks. JavaScript is about providing a dynamic interface, even today, for a web application on the client side. But the design of the web, the design of client-side things, is that you get rid of the code, it's ideally supposed to degrade gracefully. In principle, web pages should be interpretable without any JavaScript. Now, the more complicated web application you do, what you get there may, I mean, let's say you're making an in-browser game. All you may get is saying, you don't have JavaScript, so I can't show you the game. Sorry. But if it's just supposed to provide information, it'll work. So let's go back to this stuff. So I put it all back. We've got four pieces here. And four pieces of JavaScript code plus our own JavaScript code plus two style sheets. Let's say we just happen to have these files. How would we figure out what the heck these things do? Well, one way is you could Google them, but there's one thing you have to watch out if you just start Googling the behavior of random pieces of JavaScript that someone has given you. You might find the wrong one. I will tell that when I was actually looking up this code, I came across the wrong validate. In fact, there's actually multiple versions of things. You should expect this to happen. So how are you going to find it? Well, let's look at, okay, let's make this smaller so I can actually see everything. No, okay, that works. Fine. So libs, let's go to, This backspace is really hurting me. So you notice what it says. By convention, on most of these files, the very first thing in it will be a comment that will tell you what it is and the version number. Now here, they say jQuery version 1.9.0, jQuery Foundation, jQuery.org license. So now you know what the license is, you know something about it. So if you want to look it up, probably go there, go to jQuery.org, look up the version there. We have a clue. You should always, if you're trying to interpret something, look for that. Now, what happened to the rest of this file?
Screw white spaces.
Yeah. Not just white spaces, look at the variable names. A lot of them are shortened. Shortened, no white space. Why? Is this obfuscated? It's not obfuscated one bit. What? Save size. Remember, this is the web. Everything's being transmitted. Every time you load a page, this potentially is being sent. You know, hopefully they're going to send it by some sort of compress mechanism, but compression always works better if you're sending less. So this is a minified version of the library.
That means they just hack, you know, basically you run through a standard minification program that does things like shorten variable names and get rid of spaces that you don't need and stuff, and it looks like crap. But it is, but semantically, it is exactly the same as the original. Don't ever even try to edit this. If you ever have this, you can generally find the unminified version. There are programs for unminifying things that can try to make it better. Yes. Oh, Chrome DevTools. Okay, yeah. So there are various utilities for prettifying this, but the trouble is, even if it's prettified, it doesn't have the comments. So it'd be nice to get the original version of this file. So, but in any case, we're not trying to parse this file. The main thing we'd want to do now for looking at it is to know what documentation applies. So we know if we're going to look up on the web, we want to find jQuery, jQuery version 1.9.0. Okay, we're good there. But now I mention this because so jQuery will look, so jQuery is one thing. So jQuery is one thing, jQuery Validate, which is a plugin for jQuery, Bootstrap, which is another plug. So these are all basically jQuery plugins. Oh, Bootstrap, it just works with jQuery?
I don't think it uses jQuery at all.
That's true. That's a good point. I thought it was... Yeah, I thought it did need it, but we'll see. Bootstrap. Yep. Yeah, so. Yeah. So it passes in the jQuery object. Yeah. So one thing often you'll see is that you just specify the full name here in order to pass it in. Now, okay, so now we have a little, this is something that we saw also in our own code, in the example code here. Which was this pattern. So we said there's a variable, I'd shown this to you before, saying a variable, but we don't set it to a function, we set it to, there's an open paren, there's a function defined, then there's a closed paren, and then this here. So what exactly is this? We're defining a function and calling it at the same time. And it's the return of the function that we just created that is assigned to form example. And the thing that's being passed in is this. Form example or the empty object, comma, dollar. What's that? So first off, let's just look at this syntactically. I'll talk about the convention in a second, but just what can you parse from this just syntactically? Is that we're calling a function here with these arguments. So this argument says form example or empty. So what does that mean? It's either return form example if it's true, if it's false, for whatever reason, then return the empty object. So when would form example, but we're assigning form example to something already. That's what the whole thing above. So why, what's this? By default, you'd expect this, normally you'd expect form example not to be defined. So normally, you would assume that it's just going to be the empty object passed in. When would form example be defined?
Someone else decided.
If someone else did it. In particular, if this file, say, had already been loaded. Or someone just said redefined it. Yeah, exactly. So there's...
This is more so intended for multi-file libraries.
Exactly. That's for this particular thing, is not really important. But this is a pattern you'll see in various places. And the idea is that you want to make it so that a file can be loaded multiple times in different orders, and you want it to work correctly. And so if form example is already defined, then you know now you have a way of checking it. And then why dollar here? Now, really, strictly speaking, you don't normally pass in, traditionally you don't pass in dollar. You should pass in, you know, window.jQuery, right? So, but this dollar is associated with this dollar right here. So note here, form example here is a local variable. But by doing it here, the form example that's inside the function is exactly the same as the form example outside the function, if it already existed. We're not going to get, we're going to be able to access the same thing. Otherwise, we're starting with an empty object. So an empty, basically we're binding form example to an empty state, empty object that we fill in. But this is a, so notice these are all local variables. Form example and dollar here are local. But out here, they're not. So the convention is if your function is going to depend on things from the global context, be explicit about what you depend upon. Don't just access willy-nilly things from the global context. Anything you want to, make it a parameter. And then you get your own local copy. You now refer to the object at the time when it's loaded. And if some other code comes along and tries to set that symbol to some other meaning, it won't affect your function. I mean, let's say you start, when this thing's loaded, jQuery's pointing to the standard jQuery library, and then someone else decides to load some other version of jQuery. Or something else completely random, and it happened to call it jQuery. Or call it dollar or something. You won't see that inside this function. This function will keep working as it did before. Now, is that likely to happen in a lot of cases? No. If you're carrying out malicious code, maybe. If you're caring about, you know, looking at complex systems where you're incorporating lots of JavaScript code, yeah, this is going to bite you sometime. So, pass in globals as arguments. Make sure that your function is defined. If not, make sure that you're referring to the same object as before. Now, this undefined, actually, why'd you put that there?
If someone redefines undefined to not be undefined anymore, now it is undefined.
Oh, right.
Because we did not pass anything in to that variable. So it initialized the value button.
Right. That's really defensive.
Does that really happen? Undefined gets redefined?
I don't normally do that, but I felt like doing it just to show that you could.
Yeah. I feel like JavaScript is sometimes like Core Wars. Have you heard of Core Wars?
Yeah.
Core Wars is something fun to look up, you know, on an afternoon. I don't know if I'd quite call it artificial life, but it's this little simulator in which you can put multiple programs and they try to survive. They each run, they're all running in the same address space, and you try to destroy the other programs while keep protecting yourself. And you're just running. You're basically like an individual thread in this address space. So you try overriding parts of memory, basically little overwrite bombs to take out the other, you know, take out the other program. But they can move themselves. They can copy themselves to other addresses, so you don't know where they are. They're moving to this address, I'm moving to that address, they might incorporate a little random number generator and stuff. So JavaScript's a little like that.
I'm not
huh? Oh, Core Wars is just the beginning if you start getting to that stuff. So now we have that. Now let's go back to here. So here's our libraries. We're loading in a crap load of code. here's our index.js, which defines some of our own specific code. Here's some style sheets. Now we get into the actual form. So things like, so here we got a form. This is a headline, H1. We have a div. So what are divs? Yeah, it's basically a structural division. The browsers have various ways of trying to format them, but they're fundamentally about saying these are separate. And in fact, one of the points of CSS is to tell the browser how to format your divs. And what you want to do is have labels for these different compartments, and then you tell, okay, for these different compartments, do something. You know, do something pretty with them. So you'll notice in these divs, there are things like class. You know, we'll see things like class. What is class for? Just kind of intuitively, what does it look like? Yep.
Just describes what you do. Describes like the category that you.
Exactly. So what kind of division is this? That's what the class is. So, if you omit the class, will it still work? Yeah. Yeah, this is part of the optional stuff. We're telling the browser how to make this part of it do something. So, but when we specify a class, these particular classes, control group, input append, what are those? Where do those come from? Do you think those are part of the actual spec of HTML? Are they some sort of standard? They're associated with some sort of styling, but it all depends on what the particular CSS and JavaScript you have in your application, you know, what those mean. Completely context dependent. Now, when I saw those, I was going like, group, input append. Okay, those sort of sound like things for formatting, but I'm not sure what it is. It turns out those are defined by Bootstrap. To find out what those, so this is part of the domain-specific languages here. Bootstrap is defining its own language for formatting widgets using these classes. CSS classes for individual tags. How you would know that, there's no inherent meaning to that. You just have to know what Bootstrap does. You look at the documentation, you'll see, oh, control group means that, okay, this is a group of controls. And say, append them one after the other. Yes?
So that's effectively multiple inheritance, right? Because the space means there's actually two classes.
Yes, that's true. You can specify multiple classes inside of it. They're separated by spaces. Yes, that is part of the syntax of the class. But these are... Yeah, but this is interpreted by one of the libraries you incorporated. Turns out, if you go to the Bootstrap documentation, it tells you you want to make your widgets all nicely formatted. This is one of the ways you can do it. You can define all so they'll be nicely aligned and put all together. That's what we've done there. Now we specify, for each, we have three feet. We have three, fields that are always present. The name, the country, and the birthday. So for each of those, there's two things. There's the field, and then there's the button. So the first one, the input, is the input. And then the button is the thing beside it. Now, it's not quite a button. There are buttons in HTML, but that's not a button. What is it?
It's a label.
Yep. So what did it? So it gives a label of the name, and it says a class of an add-on, and then span. You know, this icon asterisk. So this is how you get the asterisk in front of the name. This is how you get the name, and then this is the label of what it's going to be. So.
Yes, sir. Second, and move the label up to the
is on the left of the label, and it's the roundings don't match up and stuff.
Okay. Well, the reason I say this is radio buttons have you can have the label defines, partially defines the radio buttons. Click on the text and have the radio buttons.
Yeah, you can't click on the label and have it work.
So. So one of the things I'm trying to impress you upon you on here is that if you want to do simple things, it actually is pretty simple. If you want to really control how things are going to look, you're going to make your life easiest, you're going to need to use some sort of library. And if you're using that sort of library, you better figure out how that library does things, because nothing else will help you. Because it's completely specific to how that library works. If you're going to use Bootstrap, Bootstrap has a lot of nice things for doing, you know, pretty input widgets, but you got to look at how Bootstrap works. And then here, so here we've got an input field, they've got this thing. Now this is part of how Bootstrap likes to do things, but this is standard HTML. Because remember, it worked when we got rid of Bootstrap. So, but you notice when we did that, it was, but again, these aren't buttons, these are labels. So all it's doing is just pretty labels. Same thing here, same thing for this one, same thing for this one. But there's something here, you got this for, you know, class add-on, you know, it's got class here, but what is this? So the slash closing means that the input one doesn't have a closing tag. There's nothing. There's no data for it. But what's this data required? So just from reading it, what does it look like it means? What?
It looks like an HTML 5.
So it turns out in the HTML, it turns out in the HTML standard, you can define parameters that are data. There's a whole namespace defined for data dash whatever. And you can just stick these in. And your application can do whatever it wants with it. So you want to embed information in this page that would later be sent back or processed, you can use data tags as attributes for random things. So stay with me there. So, okay, so someone's using this. Turns out that you think data required. So that means it's requiring, so let's look at the top here, requiring, oh, look, oh, jQuery validate.
So, like, we can't submit if we don't put in the required.
So, that's what I show you here. Now, it turns out, if you're looking at validation, there's multiple libraries for validating forms. So, we're going to go libs, jQuery validate, jQuery validate min.js. So, now we look here. It has a nice little thing here, plugins, validate, copy.
Let's go to our browser.
Read the docs. So, what it says is, what's it doing now? This is the documentation. Yes. So, I was looking for the example. So here it says jQuery validate. You just have to call jQuery, give it the form validate. In the form, you can do things like this: data required. These are the things it knows. You can specify a regular expression for data patterns. Have you all learned regular expressions? It might be worth me spending some time covering regular expressions, maybe, but really regular expressions are something you should sort of look up. There's a lot of little fiddly bits. But essentially it's, you know, context-free languages, which I don't think you've ever learned, but...
20
to 5. Yeah, 20 to 5 should do it.
should cover some of them.
Wait. Yeah, 20 or 5 now. The 20 or 5 is no longer required.
It's 38 or 3 now.
It's 38 or 3.
And my understanding is they still do it.
Yeah, but that's not a required course anymore. 2804, I think we're supposed to be writing expressions somewhere in 2804 or 1805.
In 2804, we did
this. You did do that? That is required. Anyway, these are a bunch of things that jQuery, that this jQuery validate knows how to do. So all we have to do is follow the patterns they say. Now, you might realize that when you start looking at the documentation like this, and you start looking like, how does this work? How is it doing this magic? You know what I say to that? You don't know and you don't care. You really don't care. And I say this because the complexity of some of these things is rather remarkable. If you really don't like using code you don't understand, you can do all this yourself. Ditch all the libraries, code it yourself. But yeah, you might as well shoot yourself in the head. Because it's just going to take you forever, and then it'll be browser specific, and it'll be flaky, and no. But that means everything you have, you're going to be doing some amount of magic. And the key thing to know when you're navigating this is, where is the magic? So all I can say here is that we have magic right here. That particular label, data required, is a magic thing. But what it means is that when you call when you tell it how to validate, it knows that this is a required field. So you're going to specify attributes on these different fields for validation purposes later. Now, how do you define how it's going to validate things? Not here, it's going to be in some JavaScript. But anyway, so we've done that, and then, so we've got some bootstrap stuff in here for making it looking pretty, we've got these validate stuff for validating it, and then we have a standard submit button. So this is all standard thing. When you submit, it's going to do a post, taking all the values in the fields and putting them in as attributes. So, let's now look at our JavaScript. So here we have things like date picker and autocomplete. Where do those come from? So they're in JavaScript. Right, we're just in JavaScript. What are these? So date picker and autocomplete are methods of an object. What kind of object? They're methods of, so remember with jQuery, there's two kinds of objects. There's the basic jQuery global object, and then there's a particular jQuery objects that are returned in response to queries to the jQuery global object. So what we did was, the global one is really saying, I want to look at the DOM, and I want to find the thing that's the birthday. That's the part of the DOM I want to refer to. So this is going to return back a jQuery object, which encapsulates this part of the DOM. And that object is going to have a method associated with it called datePicker. How is it going to have that method associated with it? Because someone defined it. So since it's part of, coming from the jQuery object, you'd assume it's part of jQuery. Well, jQuery is extensible. So it's either jQuery or it's a jQuery extension. This is the stuff that comes from jQuery UI. It was autocomplete jQuery UI, yeah.
Both of them,
yeah. So the calendar is kind of obvious, I kind of feel like, because that's a really fancy. Really? A calendar picker is a standard thing in HTML5?
What?
There's a lot of calendar picking that goes on.
That's true, but...
A little ways from presentation.
Yeah. It's a date picker. And who knows how it would do it. It might be a thing you spin or something. No. You know? You might turn dials or something, but anyway, this is saying run date picker for this. So what does that do? So where did this get defined, this birthday? Exactly. So where is it? There it is. See? Hash is IDs.
Yep.
So.
Dot is class.
Dot is class, right, sorry. So we wanted to refer to this ID, so we're saying for the DOM object called birthday, call date picker on it. So all of a sudden now remember that was an input field.
So is that what the dollar sign is doing?
Dollar sign is jQuery. So whenever you see dollar sign, what you're doing is normally grabbing part of the DOM. It's the entry point for jQuery, but really what you're doing is you're saying, I need to talk about some part of the DOM, so I've got some name for it, some way of accessing it, either it's a class name or an ID name, or maybe I'm talking to I talked about a whole part of the subtree. You put in what your specifier is as an argument. And then jQuery gives you back an object that encapsulates that. Basically, it's a query. There's a reason why it's called jQuery. This is your query. And your query gets you back an object. Now, associated with that object is a crap load of methods. It's all kinds of things that object can do. And you can add to them. That's what the jQuery extensions do, is they add more methods. And so here, we're just calling a method that one of our extensions defined. And that basically makes that input field into a date picker. Done.
And they were able to do that because dollar sign counts as a regular character for identifiers, so they just defined it?
Yeah, you're allowed to have dollar sign and underscore.
By convention now, dollar has been has been taken over. Yes? Sorry, what? The J. Oh, you mean the object that we're talking about here that we're calling a date picker on?
Yeah.
Kind of. Not sort of. So there's two separate things. There's JavaScript stuff. Well, it's all JavaScript. But we're talking about here a fundamental data structure in JavaScript, which is the document object model, the DOM. The document object model is a data structure that's generated from the page. So as everything you saw here, all these divs and head and everything gets turned into JavaScript objects. That's what the document object model is that's all JavaScript objects. They're JavaScript objects because after it's parsed, because then you can access them. But it's a big tree with lots of things on it, and just trying to you could write your own code to walk the DOM tree. You can do this if you feel like it. Don't do it. What folks have realized is that we should need a general way of referring to individual nodes in the tree and subtrees and other things, and that's what jQuery is for. Because it turns out there are browser-specific ways of walking the DOM. They're mostly standardized now, but still a little quirky. So it's better to wrap it in a library that not only makes it uniform, but then allows you to add lots of additional functionality. And that's what jQuery is. So I don't even want to talk about in this class how you access that stuff without jQuery. Because you shouldn't be doing it. You can do it. It's all accessible. You can stick that code in there. It's like, oh, jQuery's being annoying. I'm going to do it the manual way.
It's fine. Just document that Reddit.
Just document that, yeah. It's like, don't do it. Step back. Now, the reason why you might be tempted is because you go, well, I can understand these really simple things. When I start using these big libraries, who knows what they're doing? It's all this complicated code. But that's the only way to live on the web. You need to use that code. You need to get used to dealing with code that you don't understand. You do it. You try stuff out. You may experiment with it. You might try reading the code. You'll have to figure it out as you go. This is one of the reasons why in this class I have not sat here and said, okay, you're definitely using this and you're using this and you're making an application that looks like this, and I'm not specifying everything for you. Because part of the thing I want you to get used to is figuring it out. And I'm willing to help give you the tools to help you figure things out and give you the concepts and everything, but you only get better at this by practicing. And if you don't feel comfortable saying, like, I don't know what the heck this thing's going to do, but I'm going to sit down here and figure it out piece by piece, you know, you're going to have problems. Because, but then going, I don't know how this part works, but it seems to work for now, so I don't care. That also is like, how does that date picker work? I don't know. I don't. I mean, I could look at the code and try to work it out, but I mean, you look at it. It pops up this whole calendar. Now, it might be on some browsers, it might be using a built-in functionality for that. In other things, it might be implementing its own. You don't know, you don't care, it works. As long as it produces the result you want. Again, the autocomplete. Here, this is another thing that you give it a source, and the source is an array. Yes? Yeah, exactly. It's a tree of objects with, you know, children and everything, and you can walk it as a tree. But normally we don't even think about, when you're doing web programming, you don't really think about it as a tree in a lot of circumstances, because you just do queries. You tag everything with IDs and classes for specifying groups and other things, and then you do these queries to refer to them. And then you, when you want to change their behavior, you associate code with them. You add JavaScript to them. And when we talk about events, we're basically saying that when something happens in the page, an event will be generated, I can attach code to that. The number of events that are defined is now ridiculous. I mean, there's a whole slew of events that have now been created for dealing with touch input. And those already are browser-specific, but you know something? There's ways of wrapping it, so you don't have to worry about all the browser-specific details of how to do touch input. Yes?
So the source, for example, over there is, you're actually passing it an object.
Which line?
The country autocomplete source country.
Yes.
So
yeah, so you notice, so the idea is that this autocomplete function wants an object which contains a bunch of parameters. Bunch of options, the data it needs. And one of the attributes of that object is source.
And so,
you assign that here.
Typical, or is that
specific?
This is
an exceptionally common pattern. In JavaScript, you'll often, the only argument to a bunch will just be options, and it'll just be a map of things.
So you chuck an object to it, and then you look up in the API doc what.
Yeah.
Now,
so
you might say, why don't just give a list, right? You could have each of these things as a list of the arguments and their ways in JavaScript to handle that. But it's nice, if it's just an object, then you can pass it around much more easily. You don't have to consolidate it, especially if you want to change context with it. Or you want to store it for later. Makes it easier. But you notice, this is all stuff, this is why I tried to talk a lot earlier about functions and objects. Because you can't parse any of this unless you understand the rules of the game. And it really comes down to functions and objects. But it's not, but there isn't much syntax here. It's all, there's a lot of domain-specific languages that are being defined on the fly and intermingled. But otherwise, the syntax is actually very simple. What?
Well, like, the underlying logic is really simple, but everything else is...
No, what it means is that in a language like C++, the rules of the language are so extensive that to just be able to read the code can sometimes be like, well, it could be this, it could be that, or something. You can't even parse it. With a language like JavaScript, the language itself is relatively small. There isn't that many syntactic constructs. It's just that they're very flexible syntactic constructs. So you can build lots of stuff.
Again, here, what we're doing here is we're just getting jQuery objects and calling things on them. And notice, what do you think that show and hide do? Hides and shows them.
But what's that? What's this dot change?
It's an event.
Well,
Okay,
right.
No,
just
syntactically.
Oh.
It's
calling.
Is it changing the DOM? Like it's saying, I've added this stuff to the DOM.
Yeah.
So look here. So what's happening here is you say, send email on change. So when the send email, which is a checkbox, if you go back there, that was the checkbox. When that state changes, we call this function. We're defining an event handler here on the change on the change operation on this, and it says if the send email is checked, then show this other object. Otherwise, hide it. So, after doing all this, we're then calling change, which is. Well, which is generating the event. No, it's not checking the checkbox. It's generating the event of the state of it has changed. So what's happening is we're calling the event that is we're registering right here. And so why would we want to do this? This works. If you just define this and get rid of the dot change, this works. Exactly. Let me show you. Okay. Now let's go to my browser. Okay. Now let's go to my. So let's reload this. So now, watch this. See now, it's there. It's gone. It's there. It's gone. But when I first load it. Unchecked and also shown. Because that event has not been generated, that function has not been called to check what the appropriate state is. But understand what the convention is here. So we're calling the change method of an object. That's what it is. What object are we calling it on?
Whatever's returned by sending.
Exactly. Whatever it's returning is what we're calling. But what do you think it returns?
Send email.
Exactly.
This.
This.
So it says that for this object on an event, return itself. And then you get to specify
So what it's saying is it's defining an event handler, but it's returning the object that the event handler was defined on. So to generate an event on that, you can just call, by convention, the names of the events that you specify as strings are also, like, by convention, this and this are the same. Logically, they're potentially, you know, they could have completely different meanings, but by convention, they're made the same to keep programmers sane. So, why, when standard JavaScript behavior, which
part? Just like event handlers, do they typically do this? Like
event handlers are all about JavaScript, because that's the dynamic behavior.
Yeah.
Hmm? Oh, you mean outside of the web?
Right.
Event handlers being...
Is that a typical, like, you have some GUI widget, and the event typically returns itself?
It's a very popular
guy. Well, the thing you have to realize with this... is that the thing that drew the interface is defined in this markup language. And one way you could have done this is instead of... So what you could have done is we could have, when we defined this page, just had the checkbox and not had this there at all. We could have used JavaScript to dynamically inject that field into the page.
Might not be as fast.
I wouldn't. It's not so much speed. When you're talking about interface things like this, the speed. I mean, I'm not. You aren't trying to optimize efficiency at that level when you're doing web documents.
That's true.
But more importantly, since it's here. The functionality is there even if the JavaScript goes away. Otherwise, if the JavaScript went away, a field would not be there. So normally, the convention is you make all the possibilities of your interface be present in your HTML, DOM. It also makes life a little easier. And then, if it turns out you want to hide portions of it, you hide it later. So, for example, if you have an interface that's going to hide like most of this content, if you get rid of the code, it'll all be shown. So here we're just saying, really by calling the change event, we're just saying, yeah, hide it. Okay, so we're almost out of time here, but are people feeling like, so what you should be doing now is to do, you can start trying to understand this example or not, but the thing that's important for you all is that as you start trying to build things, what you're going to do is play with some stuff with Node, play with the frameworks, that will get you a basic server, play with stuff on the client, making your little interfaces, and then you'll glue them together. Or you can just stick them in there and just see. But what you're going to find is getting all the logic working, making everything really dynamic, will take time. So first, just make sure the client provides the input you need to the server. Now, if you're doing something that is extremely client-heavy, like that's a pure game or something, I would still suggest you do this. In order to get the server portions working right. You might then separately just have a local file where you just hack on the interface. But remember, especially on the client, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be using some libraries. You have to look at those libraries and understand their documentation and look at examples and be prepared for lots of behavior that you don't understand. Follow the patterns. That's okay. That's the way you do this. And then when things break, you're going to have to go deeper and you're going to have to walk through it. But then just debug the portions that you need. Don't try debugging the whole thing. Don't try understanding the whole thing. You'll just get lost. So now let's go back to what did I add as...
Any questions? Yes?
So, this form will work fine from the service perspective. You need to remove all the script and link tags.
True.
This form validates on every key press. I didn't show that, but... Oh, that was the thing I left. Let me go back here and show that. So again, the validation part, it turns out you look up this form validate, there's a whole, that on that page I was showing you, there's documentation of what attributes it does. One of the things it defines is on key up, which means every time a key is released, it runs this. You can also specify it only runs validate when you submit the form or other things. That's part of this validation package. So that one's true. The form validates only if you enter a predefined country. Did you all play with that? You should know from playing in the lab. That is false. There is nothing about the autocompletes it, but it does not. There's no sort of restriction. The validate function doesn't know anything about the list of countries. So it doesn't check it right now. You could change it, but that's separate. Autocomplete is separate from the validation. Remember, it's just by the library. Autocomplete is provided by the UI, by jQuery UI. The validation is provided by the jQuery validate. You have to connect them together yourself. The control group class is used by the core jQuery code?
False.
Bootstrap. And in the context of the form example, dollar is a global variable.
False.
It's local. Because it has a specific local meaning, which we pass in dollar to it. It's a local variable. That's the whole idea of that convention, is to make all globals local. Yes?
So do people want to see more of these kind of examples to see how to actually write class at Jeff?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that really helps.
Okay. We'll put more of these together. Oh. And was walking through it like this helpful?
Yes.
Okay.
So,